Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Don't Get Mad at Penguins and Other Ways to Detox the Conflict in Your Life and Business by Gabe Karp. Narrated by Gabe Karp. Publisher's note: this audiobook has bonus material in the form of summary boxes at the end of each chapter for easy reference. If you cannot find these images on the platform you're using to listen to this book, please contact whomever you purchased this audiobook from to request the bonus material. Introduction. Gabe Karp, you look like shit. Steve grinned as he swept into the waiting area. His bold remark caught me off guard, but to be fair, I was coming off an exhausting red-eye flight. Nice to meet you, too. I shook his hand. I was here to observe Steve's company. Let's call it Vulcan Solutions, because it had the fastest growth rate and the highest level of conflict out of any company in my data set. On the surface, their business model was boring. They manufacture recyclable synthetic rubber for medical devices. But under that conservative facade, this company was buzzing with confrontation during every meeting. And somehow, this confrontational culture was working well for them. I wanted to get to the bottom of what they were doing. So I asked their CEO, Steve, to let me shadow him for the day. What I saw during that visit completely contradicts how most people think conflict works. While most of us generally fear and avoid conflict, it's a powerful asset for those who understand it. In fact, healthy conflict has been the greatest factor driving my success as a lawyer, entrepreneur, and venture capitalist. I wrote this book to help others benefit from conflict in the same way. Of course, not all conflict is productive. There's healthy conflict, and there is toxic conflict. While healthy conflict propels people and organizations forward, toxic conflict slows us down and causes pain. It consumes an organization's energy, taxing its ability to compete, grow, and prosper. When conflict turns toxic, team engagements are painful, client relationships are strained, and individual careers suffer. The same painful dynamics play out in our personal lives as well. Toxic conflict deprives us of the love, friendships, and relationships that we seek and need. Toxic conflict, however, is far from inevitable. Just as we might go on a dietary cleanse to rid our bodies of toxins, we can do the same to detox our organizations and our minds. And when we do, the results are phenomenal. Once we cleanse the toxins, we suddenly feel energized to embrace conflict and leverage it to drive new innovation. We navigate difficult situations with ease and elevate our relationships to a higher plane. Detoxing our companies and our minds makes us better, stronger, faster, and more connected. The path that led me to this perspective began when I was a trial lawyer, investigating the sources of conflict in my cases. I had a front row seat to the conflicts of others, and I observed how certain communication styles always seemed to either improve or worsen a situation. In those days, a big part of my job was to control the level of conflict. During intense negotiations, I diffused the conflict to help everyone relax and trust one another. During contentious cross-examinations, on the other hand, I amped up the tension when I wanted to rattle a witness or make a dramatic point to the jury. While I served my clients well and achieved great results, I also suffered painful losses and struggled in difficult interactions with others for reasons I did not understand. Over time, I noticed the same patterns of conflict I had seen in my cases play out in my personal life too. I was identifying the toxins that build up in human interactions and make them unhealthy. When my clients and I were able to detox those interactions, we were successful in resolving the conflicts. But when the toxins were left unchecked, we were generally in for an expensive and painful experience. When I joined a small startup called ePrize and saw these same toxic patterns play out in the business world, I knew I was onto something important. Building a company from the ground up requires a lot of conflict. But I noticed that when we detoxed those conflicts, they really propelled our business forward. When we engaged in non-toxic confrontations with employees, clients, and shareholders, we achieved far superior results than when we avoided difficult issues or allowed toxins to infect interactions. This approach helped us grow our company into the world leader in the digital promotions industry. We acquired several smaller companies along the way and ultimately negotiated the sale of ePrize. After our successful acquisition, I entered the world of venture capital, where I've continued to experience the role of conflict on a broader scale. I've led the investments in and served on the board of directors of over a dozen companies, and I continue to witness the effects of both healthy and toxic conflict. I've negotiated business and financing deals in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and I've worked with CEOs to resolve conflicts ranging from clients wanting to cancel multi-million dollar contracts to underperforming team members requesting pay raises and everything in between. Regardless of how big or small the conflict, the same patterns play out over and over. I've also seen the role that toxic conflict plays in the personal lives of the people I've worked with and those close to me. Sadly, I know people who no longer speak to each other because of political arguments on social media. Friends have confided in me about strained relationships with their parents, disputes with their neighbors, and challenges with their kids. The same patterns of conflict I saw in the business world apply in all walks of life, my own included. Whether you're in the courtroom, the boardroom, the break room, a bar, the high school cafeteria, a parent-teacher conference, your holiday dinner table, or anywhere else humans interact, conflicts follow the same patterns. We all want to be better at managing conflict, but many of us never learned how. There's no class in school for it. Think about it. We spend months in elementary school learning long division, which we never use. Yet we spend zero time learning conflict management, something we could all use virtually every day of our lives. The good news is that I've discovered a systematic way to detox conflict. It's a process I've developed through years of practical experience and academic research into how we can harness conflict to lead happier and more productive lives. Once I started to apply what I'd learned, I noticed immediate and dramatic improvements in my ability to successfully navigate conflict. I realized I was onto something with these strategies a few years back when I was asked to speak to a group of CEOs about how to handle conflict. The speech was all right, but not my greatest. But in the weeks and months that followed, though, I was approached by several of the CEOs, and they all mentioned one of the ideas I had shared, especially one in particular, something called "Don't Get Mad at Penguins Because They Can't Fly." I also received a strong positive reaction for a tactic I call the shopping list voice, which you'll hear about later. As I shared these tactics with others, many reported similarly positive results. So I researched and developed more strategies as well, teaching them to others and getting feedback. I've given presentations on conflict to companies, trade organizations, entrepreneur groups, lawyers, and universities, and I've received enough feedback on my approaches to know they are reliable and repeatable. These are skills anyone can learn and apply. While some of us may fear conflict, and others may love a good fight, we all have the ability to manage conflict to drive better outcomes for our companies, clients, and loved ones. This book will take you deep into the causes of conflict and provide you with tools to detox and leverage it for success and happiness. A lack of understanding of how conflict works can explain why some companies rise and others fall, and why some careers are spectacular, while others are tragic letdowns. By understanding the nature of conflict and how it can become toxic, we can rise above these challenges. The real magic happens in organizations where conflict is not only accepted, but encouraged and required. These companies, families, and groups operate with candor and accountability. They execute at awe-inspiring speeds and blow past those who shy away from difficult issues. People within these special organizations communicate openly and clearly. They engage in free expression of ideas. Anyone with something to say has the opportunity to say it. Mistakes are uncovered quickly, and performance issues are addressed without drama. People advance in their careers and grow in their personal lives in ways not possible when conflict is viewed as a negative. Once you experience the benefits of non-toxic conflict, you will start to lean into it. You will invite it into your professional and personal life, and you'll use it to deepen your relationships and push your performance to the next level. This book fills in the gaps left by the school system. It breaks down the factors that escalate conflict to dangerous heights and shows you how to diffuse them and make conflict work for you rather than against you. It will increase your empathy toward others, teach you to identify conflict traps before you fall into them, and help you view conflict as a productive driver of success. You'll learn simple but highly effective tools to embrace conflict so that it can fuel progress and help you communicate more effectively in all areas of life. Along the way, you'll see the fight that ended Quentin Tarantino and Uma Thurman's friendship, the swear words that were accidentally printed on thousands of Pampers diapers packages, the toxic culture at General Motors that cost the company over $2 billion and killed 124 people, and the inner workings of SEAL Team 6, the elite crew that took out Osama bin Laden. You'll also meet the Buddhist monk who saved thousands from child prostitution because he was willing to treat the leaders of a Beijing crime syndicate like human beings, the executive who sues people for sport, and the judge who made me feel good even as he ruled against me, and the woman who ended a years-long cycle of personal conflict with her ex-husband once she learned to stop getting mad at penguins. I've changed some names and settings to protect identities, but the substance and lessons of these stories remain intact. Before we can get into all of that, however, I have to tell you what happened at Vulcan Solutions when I went to shadow Steve for the day and observe his completely unorthodox style of conflict management. Chapter 1. To Embrace or Resist Conflict. In researching this book, I analyzed data from over 100 sources to determine the ideal level of conflict in an organization. I assumed I already knew the answer before I started. Some conflict is beneficial, but you don't want to have too much of it, or too little. Ignoring conflict isn't healthy, I figured, but dwelling on past disagreements isn't productive either. The most effective approach, I thought, would be somewhere in between. However, the results told a different story. I found that the more conflict a company had among its team members, the faster it tended to grow. From the look of things, conflict was a good thing. But there was an important caveat. This was only true for companies where the employees maintained strong, trusting relationships in spite of high levels of conflict. That finding was what sent me to the headquarters of Vulcan Solutions to shadow Steve, the CEO for the day. His company simultaneously had the highest level of conflict and the fastest growth rate in my entire data set. What were they doing here that was so special? I bounded after Steve as he slipped through a side door and down a narrow corridor on the way to our first meeting. Then we stepped into a conference room where Steve introduced me to a man and a woman. "This is Gabe," he announced, winking at me. "I'm training him to handle conflict in the workplace." The other two were vice presidents in the design and fabrication departments, and Steve was there to review their quarterly progress. I've sat in hundreds of these meetings during my years as an executive and as a board member. But that couldn't have prepared me for what I was about to see. The conflict started immediately when a VP didn't know the answer to one of Steve's questions. "Stacy is working on that," she said. "Let me check with her." Then a few minutes later, the other VP made a similar statement. "I'm not sure on those exact numbers," he said. "Stacy has those, and I can get them from her." And then less than 5 minutes after that, it happened again. "I'll grab those exact details from Stacy." "I need to ask a question," Steve said, puzzled. "Who the fuck is Stacy?" "We hired her a few months ago," came the reply. "She's doing great, especially since she's only 23, and we recruited her straight out of college with no manufacturing experience." That's the third time in this meeting that one of you has said you need to check with Stacy on something. Steve didn't yell, but he spoke with an intensity that commanded the room. "Next time that happens, I'm giving Stacy a $10,000 raise. And if it happens again, I'm giving her another $10,000 raise. And if I start to pay Stacy that much money for doing your work, then what the fuck do I need you for?" The VPs were silent. "Should we reconvene in an hour so you can go have Stacy teach you what the fuck is going on?" Steve asked, his voice calm. "Because otherwise, Stacy should be sitting here instead of you." As a side note, Steve's F-bomb to total word ratio is one of the highest I've ever seen. Slowly, the VPs nodded their heads. Then they apologized to Steve and promised to do better in the future. "You're right," one VP said. "We haven't been as involved as we should be on this, and Stacy has really been picking up the slack." "We'll take care of it," said the other VP. "Thanks for pointing it out. You're absolutely right." The two of them packed up their things and filed out of the room, and Steve and I headed off to his next meeting of the day. It played out in much the same way, with Steve giving harsh and blunt feedback to the employees about their performance, and them thanking him and promising to work on his suggestions going forward. Every meeting at Vulcan Solutions followed a similar script. Steve always asked thoughtful and probing questions before eventually saying some variation of, "This is crap," but without getting angry or emotional. Despite Steve's harsh language, the meetings did not feel uncomfortable, and I did not get the sense from anyone that they felt disrespected or treated unfairly. Some people were obviously embarrassed, but everyone took full ownership of the issues when Steve pointed them out and seemed to immediately move forward to address them. At most companies, executives work hard to position constructive criticisms between two pieces of praise, the classic shit sandwich approach, but employees still get upset about receiving feedback. Steve, on the other hand, says whatever is on his mind, cuss words and all, and doesn't rub anyone the wrong way. He has created a culture where no one shies away from direct feedback, and no one is offended when they receive it. In fact, brutal honesty is preferred by everyone. Importantly, this is very much a two-way street at Vulcan. I saw Megan, a team leader, criticize Steve for telling one of her direct reports a few days earlier to drop what he was doing and help Steve with something. Megan said that particular team member was working on a time-sensitive project, and if Steve had come to her first, she would have gotten someone else to help him. She felt Steve undermined her authority, jeopardized missing an important deadline, and basically made her job harder. Megan didn't yell or complain. Her tone was matter-of-fact. Steve immediately responded, "I guess I did a pretty good job screwing that one up." He looked at her with sincerity and said, "I'm sorry. That was wrong of me. I'm going to apologize to your team member for pulling him off a project without checking with you first and tell him that if I ever do that again, he should feel free to ask if I've cleared it with you." She smiled and said with a wink, "No problem. Just don't ever do it again." The culture at Vulcan Solutions just works. Unfortunately, this culture is the exception, not the rule. Many business cultures are engineered to avoid conflict. Mistakes are frowned upon and seen as badges of shame. Conformity takes priority over accountability. Surrounded by this toxic culture, many of us feel unsafe expressing contrary opinions. Outside of work, the barrage of toxic conflict in social media and the news wears us down. We keep critical feedback to ourselves, afraid of offending a coworker, even when feedback would help the person improve. We are reluctant to call out problems or disagree with someone, especially an authority figure. When in doubt, say nothing. Don't share any opinions or feedback that could make someone feel bad. The well-intentioned desire to be respectful and polite has led to an environment in which people only say what they think others want to hear. This mentality deprives us of the opportunity to correct mistakes, improve behavior, and strive toward our maximum potential. We all need candid feedback, and by censoring our comments to avoid ruffling feathers, we do a great disservice to one another. People who are able to accept direct feedback will learn and improve faster than those who can't. If helpful feedback is withheld from an employee because their boss is afraid to hurt their feelings, that boss has denied the employee a valuable opportunity to grow and improve. The boss's compassion is misdirected into silence instead of feedback, and the one who suffers is the employee. How's that for irony? Looking out for people doesn't mean smiling, being nice, and telling them what they want to hear. It often requires giving difficult feedback to help them grow. In fact, it would be cruel and disrespectful to withhold that kind of feedback. But even though we all would benefit from a culture where candid communication is welcomed and encouraged, that kind of environment is rare and does not happen by chance. Thankfully, even the most toxic environment can be detoxed. You can take a culture where unhealthy conflict is rampant and turn it into a place like Vulcan Solutions. Mary Barra experienced the need to change a culture of unhealthy conflict firsthand when she took the helm at General Motors in the middle of one of the worst crises the company has ever faced. 16 days after becoming CEO on January 15, 2014, she learned GM had been installing defective ignition switches in its vehicles. Car accidents were occurring across the country, causing serious injuries and death. but this had been covered up at GM for years. The first victim of GM's negligence was Amber Marie Rose, a 16-year-old who was driving her new Chevy Cobalt in the early morning hours of July 19, 2005, when it crashed into a tree outside of Eastern Dentsville, South Carolina. She died hours later at the hospital. An investigation revealed that a design flaw in the car's ignition had caused the vehicle to suddenly switch to the accessory position while Amber was driving. This shut off the engine and disengaged the safety systems, including the power steering, anti-lock brakes, and airbags. But Amber's tragedy was only the beginning. The ignition switch defect ultimately caused 124 deaths and 275 injuries. The financial impact to GM was devastating, leading to the recall of 30 million vehicles worldwide and costing GM over $2.5 billion in fines and settlements. Not to mention the massive loss of trust of its customer base, its shareholders, and the public at large. Mary Barra discovered, to her horror, that GM had been attempting to avoid responsibility for the ignition switch problem. For example, 5 months after Amber's accident, GM had sent its dealers a bulletin stating that an ignition switch defect can occur when, quote, the driver is short and has a large and/or heavy keychain. The customer should be advised of this potential and should remove unessential items from their keychain. Let that sink in for a minute. GM knew its cars had a defect that could suddenly shut off the vehicle, disabling power steering, anti-lock brakes, and airbags, while the vehicle was traveling at high speeds. And the company's response was to suggest that people avoid big keychains, rather than to issue an immediate recall. Sadly, the tragedies continued. To fix these problems, Barra realized she needed to embrace conflict head-on. She launched a thorough investigation and discovered the real problem wasn't an engineering issue. It was high levels of toxic conflict in the organization. She learned there were people within GM who had known for more than 10 years about the faulty ignition switches, but had kept quiet out of fear they would be bullied, fired, harassed, and/or ridiculed. General Motors had a culture that discouraged employees from raising safety concerns. While the design defect was a technical problem, the root cause was a cultural one. In April of 2014, Barra appeared before Congress to speak about the ignition switch defect. Instead of making excuses or shying away from the issues, she apologized for GM's past actions, acknowledged their deficits, and offered an honest explanation for why the company had been dragging its feet. She admitted the situation was GM's fault and assured the world that things were changing. Under Barra's leadership, GM issued massive recalls of affected vehicles, provided unprecedented transparency to investigators, and stepped up to be held accountable for its behavior. She used the opportunity to reinvent the company and its brand, to revamp the internal culture, and to re-establish trust with the public. Safety and customer focus became the center of every decision. An example from 2019 demonstrates these results in action. An assembly line worker at a GM plant noticed that a part appeared to be installed incorrectly. He submitted a speak-up alert, and GM investigated immediately. Because of the early warning, GM had to repair fewer than 200 cars. Before Mary Barra changed the culture, that production defect likely would have gone unreported and affected tens of thousands of vehicles coming off that assembly line. Mary Barra was able to detox GM's culture, and her efforts paid off. Today, the company is performing at extraordinary levels, reaching new heights in shareholder value and profitability. All of this was possible because Mary Barra embraced conflict, managed it proactively, and leveraged it to drive progress. She used formal processes and policies to detox the culture at GM, whereas at Vulcan Solutions, the healthy culture of conflict flowed naturally from Steve's leadership and his brutal honesty but non-threatening communication style. While these two approaches were very different, the results were the same. Both companies created environments that keep toxic conflict at bay. Of course, toxic conflict isn't reserved for just the GMs of the world. We all experience conflict in a variety of forms every day. Even something as simple as a few harsh words or a critical facial expression can stir our emotions and affect us deeply. My mom still remembers the stinging feeling of humiliation when she was accused of shoplifting decades ago by a well-meaning security guard at the mall. She had gone to the department store to exchange a onesie she had bought for my brother a few days earlier. She simply needed a different size. It was mid-December, the peak of holiday shopping, and the store was busy and chaotic. She found the new onesie in the correct size and looked around for an associate to help with the exchange, but none was in sight. She checked the tags on both garments. The prices were identical. So, she put the onesie she'd purchased a few days earlier on the table, grabbed the new one, and headed for the door. She was almost out of the store when a security guard grabbed her arm with a firm hand and said, "Where do you think you're going?" My mom's anxiety level shot into overwhelmed mode, and she meekly tried to explain the situation. But the security guard said, "That's a likely story," and took her to an interrogation room. Sitting there alone in department store jail, all she could think of was the shame this scandal would bring her family if anyone found out. About 10 minutes later, the guard returned and said, "You can go now, but don't ever do anything like this again." The ordeal had shaken my mom. She dwelled on it for days, reliving the stress of the incident repeatedly in her mind. Reflecting on it now, my mom wishes she'd simply stood up for herself, calmly explained the situation, showed the security guard the receipt, and left. But when conflict descended upon her without warning, it triggered a panicked emotional response, and she shut down. And I'm sure it would have been even more harrowing if she weren't a suburban white woman. Even though the security guard used professional language, the encounter triggered my mom's fight-or-flight response. On the other hand, Steve's blunt, profanity-laced comments at Vulcan Solutions do not trigger any of his team members to get emotional. This illustrates how certain factors can detox an environment so that conflict proceeds in a healthy way. While this department store incident is minor compared to the General Motors ignition switch tragedy, the same factors are at play. Just like those GM engineers who knew about the ignition switch defect for 10 years but never came forward, my mom withdrew and kept silent in the face of conflict, and it ultimately made the situation worse. While these two scenarios might seem worlds apart on the surface, when we look deeper, the only difference between them is severity. All toxic conflicts follow a set of simple patterns, regardless of the scale, situation, or number of parties involved. And this means the same tools can be used to overcome a wide variety of highly charged interpersonal situations. Before we can talk about how to overcome toxic conflict, it helps to understand where it comes from in the first place. Why is conflict so hard? Like most human traits, conflict has its roots in both nature and nurture. The animal kingdom is rife with conflict. It is an indispensable feature of life. But humans take this to a whole new level. Whenever humans interact, there is conflict between family and friends, employees and employers, and nations on the global stage. We even have the unique ability to engage in entirely internal conflicts, where we debate against ourselves inside of our own heads. It's important to note that conflict in some form is inevitable. History books may paint human achievement as a clear progression from one feat, invention, or discovery to the next, but that progress takes place in the midst of adversity, dissent, and even violent opposition. Conflict is fundamental to life. Any worthwhile achievement involves overcoming resistance. The notion that conflict is bad and should be avoided is wrong and can be downright harmful. Trying to avoid conflict usually makes things worse, like it did for General Motors and for my mom at the shopping mall. Let's look at the two main drivers of conflict in more detail. First, we'll explore the nature component and see how our brains are wired to respond to conflict in certain ways from birth. Then we'll cover the nurture side of things and see how our environment socializes us to deal with conflict in ways that can be counterproductive. Survival instinct. The first driver of toxic conflict is nature, or our innate genetic predispositions, which work well to protect us from physical threats in the jungle, but can backfire when applied to interpersonal dynamics. We all have over a billion years of evolution hard-coded into our DNA, and conflict can trigger our instinctive survival system, sending us into fight-or-flight mode.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?